This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. We're going to have another great day today, a perfect guest for this day. And I want to let you know that this first part of our show has been brought to you by Stan McNabb Automotive, where they provide quality vehicles from Chevrolet, Dodge, Jeep, Ford, and Cadillac to the Murfreesboro, McMinnville, and Shelbyville, Tennessee area. For a quality used car in Tullahoma, visit their dealership located at 2000 North Jackson Street. They have a large inventory of pre-owned cars, trucks, SUVs, and minivans to select from. A vehicle you buy from Stan McNabb, Chevrolet, Cadillac, Buick, GMC, and Stan McNabb Jeep, Dodge, Chrysler in Tullahoma, and Stan McNabb Ford in Lewisburg, and a vehicle you buy from another dealership may look alike, have the same equipment, and be priced the same, but the truth is they are different. And this is the biggie. Only the new or pre-owned vehicles from Stan McNabb has oil changes and tires for life at no additional charge. And I have a gentleman up here with me today that I see quite often. In fact, I think I see his dad more than I see him. And actually, Jim is probably getting close to a retirement age, is if there is such a thing. And I have Peter Demas on today. And that little place that you've got out there on Broad Street called Demas's Restaurant is one place that I frequent quite a lot. And part of it is because it's some of the best food I've ever put in my mouth. And the other thing about it is it's always friendly. They are always nice. They meet you when you come into the door, and they greet you in a kind and generous way, and they stay that way the whole time you're there.
I appreciate that. We're very fortunate with a lot of the staff that we've had and been able to maintain throughout the years, so definitely appreciate hearing the good comments.
Now, you are in a family business, a family-run business, and pretty much came over from the country of Greece.
My grandfather came over. My grandfather on my father's side and my great-grandfather on my his mother's side. So both came over from Greece. My grandfather came over about 1920, and started a little restaurant. He and his brother started a restaurant in Pratt City, Alabama, right outside of Birmingham. And
I know it.
My father worked in that throughout the World War II when he couldn't get any labor. Mm-hmm. And he left to go work in the motion picture theater business and did that for about 20 years, and then got back into the restaurant business with a Western Sizzlin' franchise. And in fact, one of his franchise stores was here in Murfreesboro.
They remember
opened
it
up
well.
In the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Over where Coach's is right now is actually where it was located. So
that. Tell me, you were talking about something interesting before we came on the show. Your actually family name, how do you pronounce that when it was in Greece?
It was, and my pronunciation may not be exactly correct either. It's close enough for government work, but it's Kretsidimas is the pronunciation of it. And then when my grandfather's brothers came here first, mm-hmm. and they shortened their name was shortened to Demas, and I think it was shortened by some of the immigration officials. And then my grandfather showed up with them, and they had to shorten the name. And Demas is a hard name to pronounce in Alabama in the 1930s, and I'm sure Kretsidimas would have been much more difficult at that time.
But and that's the thing. It's always amazed me when you come from a country where it's Greece, or I've known a lot of people that came from Poland that they had their names slashed almost in half in two, and I've always thought that maybe it was a way to either become more Americanized or maybe easier for everyone else to pronounce their names, because I still have trouble with some of the names that we have here now. But I did not realize that the government was the one that was actually taking hold of that, because I had a number of friends when I was in the service, and a number of them were from Poland that had names like Roth, R-O-T-H. And you think, well, you know, that's a great name, R-O-T-H. but it was Rothinsky, and it was a continuation of that.
One of the stories I've heard has been when people have come through Ellis Island, they would say what their name was, and the agent who was doing the intake at them would say, "No, we're just going to make you this now." And so they would change the name and shorten the name to whatever name seemed to fit, or that, you know, especially during that time when such huge immigration came through Ellis Island. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it was a pretty tiring work, and you know, people would take shortcuts and do that as well. And you know, the people coming into the country were so grateful to be here in the United mm-hmm. States. I don't think they're going to complain too loudly either.
No, especially when people are mispronouncing your name all over the place anyway to start with. And then your dad began the business here, and we're talking about Jim.
Yes.
And as it evolved, he brought a number of recipes from the old country over here that were just absolutely out of this world. And I think that's when one of the strengths of Demus is where else can you go to get that type of food and be so tasteful? But yet, I have told you, Dad, this before. One of the places I love to sit in your restaurant is when you go in and you go around the place where they greet you at the little table where you sign in, and you go left. You get to watch all the waiters and waitresses as they meet there in that one place. That's what I call the heart or the engine of that whole place. And it's constant movement. But they seem to be all having a cheerful good time or whatever. I've never seen a place like it.
Well, it has to be constant movement, because if you stand still, you're going to be knocked over.
Right.
So everyone's expecting you to move, and so it works out very well. But yeah, there are times where I will stand there and just watch what's going on, and I'm amazed. And I've, you know, been doing this for a real long time, and mm-hmm. I'm amazed just watching just how the motion works and throughout the years. And I'll go back and look at old pictures and mm-hmm. see, you know, not much has changed except hairstyles and tie sizes.
Now, almost all family businesses, as the kids come along, there is always a little bit of a rebellion to stay out of the family business. Because I have a number of friends that the business has been here almost 100 years, a lot of them, but they always come back. Did you have that problem?
Absolutely. I started working for my father with Western Sizzling when I was 12. The first one I worked at was in Green Hills, mm-hmm. and worked in the Western Sizzling. Said I didn't want to have anything to do with it, and went to did retail for a year, and mm-hmm. then came back into the business. And then when I went to school in Memphis for a couple of years, and then I ended up coming and graduating from MTSU, that's when Demus's was opened. And, mm-hmm. and I would work when I was working at MTSU, going to school at MTSU, and I would work there at nights and weekends. But I always said I wanted to be a lawyer. And yeah, I know. And which I became. I was sitting at a desk one day and listening to the two people talk in the law office, and I said I don't want to have that conversation in 10 years. And so I still even then worked part-time in the restaurant, but it was a passion for people that made me want to go into law. And then I realized that I can do more in trying to help people in the restaurant business than I can doing actually the practice of law. People come into the restaurant for an experience. They come in not because they're hungry, but they come in to feel better. And mm-hmm. then on top of that, we also impact so many people's lives that work for us. And so it's I feel we've accomplished more in trying to help people in through the restaurant than I ever could have as a lawyer.
I think that you and your dad and your mom were great role models. Because you take in all these kids, and a lot of them are college kids, the ones that I've seen in there, and just getting started. But they learn really great work ethics when they're there. They know what it is to earn a dollar, and they know what it is to reach out and make people feel good. I have never had anyone come to my table in the many times that I've eaten there that they didn't want to know how I was doing and is there anything I can do to help you or whatever. I mean, they're always very responsive. And I've been in before, and I find it quite interesting. In most restaurants you go in and they tell you it'll be a 30-minute wait. Well, I say, well, you know, we'll be here 30 minutes. And usually we're there at least that long. And maybe I'll... when they tell me that it's going to be 30 minutes at Demas's, I tell my wife, it won't be 30 minutes. It'll be 15 minutes. You watch and see. And it is. But it's like a well-oiled machine. I mean, you make people feel great. The food is excellent. It's healthy food. But yet, you're still able to get in and get out, and people don't loiter there. I mean, it's not that they wouldn't like to stay there, but it's just part of the business.
I'm a very fanatical person about time. I drive my wife absolutely insane trying to, because I will literally think of how I can save seconds just in course of my day, of my everyday work. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always watching the operations and trying to figure out where we can save seconds here and there in order without interfering with the customer's experience. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we've learned to do is on how we bust the tables once people get up, and the process beforehand is a huge of getting people between the time it's up and the time it's down. Mm-hmm. There are many restaurants that I go to and I get very aggravated with because be on a wait and I'll look around the dining room and there's 10, 12 empty tables.
Right.
And that just drives me insane. My mother was actually the first person to realize that being on a wait with an empty table was a bad thing. And she never worked in the restaurant before. And so she would just seat them and as a manager would help the server out. My father told her, he said, you can't do that. And she said, why not? And he said, well, you're just not supposed to. And she said, well, just watch me. I'm going to do it anyway. And so she did it. And as a result, we've come up with a system of having a lot more managers than many other restaurants. The managers are there to help the servers. So again, so that we're not in that situation.
And the thing about it is you have quantity because you have a lot of people working there. And it's a continuous thing going on. But you have quality too, and that's the hard thing to be able to understand is that you're able to furnish both of them.
Yeah, the quality is we're very fortunate with the staffs that we've had, and a lot of it started with both my parents. Mm-hmm. And just kind of the culture they have established. So when you come and you start, a lot of people just don't know any better. Mm-hmm. You know, many of the people that we hire are never served before, and so they don't know any better. And we actually prefer if they do not have experience, as long as they have the personality and they can move quickly. You made the comment behind that server line. Again, any server that works for us that doesn't move fast, they ain't going to last long.
Oh, I can tell that. So. And the lady I was talking to you about earlier is one of your managers. I have seen her have an individual there before who was obviously first-time training, and she was having a time with her, but still... I mean, she stayed on her. She made sure that she was doing the proper things in the proper amount of time. And that is why you guys have become so successful, is that you don't ever let mediocrity step in the way. I mean, you're always working. And for you guys, the family members, you start real, like you said, you started at 11 years old.
Started at 12.
All right, 12
yeah,
years
my,
old.
My sister also started at 12, working in Western Sizzlin as well.
Now and, the grandchildren in there working.
Yes, my son comes in from time to time. Mm-hmm. and will host. And then even like today, my wife had a meeting there, and she brought the kids in, and she looked at one of the managers and said, hey, can you find them something to do? And they get all thrilled. When I told my son, I said, hey, Jamie, I said, we're going to be working tomorrow. And he looked at me and he said, well, it's about time. And he's 8 years, he just turned 9 years old, but he was eight at the time. And he was thrilled to death to do it. And he's actually gone to some of our other locations and helped out there. And he does a very good job. He, as a host, he'll get tips from customers, and it just thrills him to death to do it. And my daughter will come in and she'll help roll silverware and do a lot of that stuff. And she's 6 years old. So,
well, I saw your son in there working one day, and then I talked to your dad, and he said, yeah, we start him out early, and I got to thinking, now if I was 8 or 9 years old and in there working at the restaurant, I don't think I would have been smiling as much as he was.
Again, it's you know, both you know, with me and my sister, you know, it was a thrill to work there. Mm-hmm. And I did not have the by the time that I started working in it, my father had multiple Western Sizzlings, so I didn't get to work with him directly until Demas's opened. I would mm-hmm. see him occasionally. My sister started right when he started the franchise, so she mm-hmm. worked with him a lot more closely. But you know, it's just one of those things that, again, it's just part of a culture. It's just kind of accepted, and mm-hmm. I've had people mention that before of, you mean he doesn't complain? And I'm like, no, you know, and he works at home, and you know, he has chores he has to do, and he's been doing it since he was six, and chores he has to do, and before he goes to bed, you know, one of them, he has to clean his sink up, because you know, he still doesn't know how to rinse out a sink when he brushes his teeth, so he has to clean the sink every night. So, you know, those are things that just kind of just part of the way of life that we have.
Now, you have everything going perfectly here.
I wouldn't say that either.
Well, I mean, as good as it can be. And I've talked to Jim before, and I think, is there talk about expanding the business out into other areas? And how do you think when you do that, it's going to affect how you are here?
Well, we do, you know, we have five locations
right now.
One of the things that we have decided to do is that we are not going to expand into a location until we have people trained. So mm-hmm. our job is to try to get many people to understand the culture and to buy into it so they mm-hmm. can teach it on to other people before we can grow into another location. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, within the last couple of years, there's been too many the business climate that has been passed down from the government has not been very good and has not made me look forward to wanting to risk putting that much money into expansion. We have another concept that I've been working on and developing for several years now, but again, everything is just pretty much on hold until we can kind of feel comfortable with the risk that comes into play in opening up a restaurant.
You know, it's a shame as the economy seems to get worse from time to time. The successful businesses are sometimes the ones that suffer the most when this type of atmosphere hits. And it seems like to me that government has a hard time understanding what business is like. And to be perfectly honest, they have a hard time understanding what education is about. And if we've failed anywhere in this country in the last 15, 20 years, it seems like that's where we failed. It's not the businesses that have brought down the problem. Sometimes it's the restrictions and the other rules and regulations they place upon you.
Well, yeah, and I recognize that there are, you know, purposes for a lot of the rules and regulations.
Right.
I mean, you know, some people take advantage of it and they make it bad for the rest of us that don't. But at the same time, you know, if you go all the way through history, you know, going back to the spice trades, mm-hmm. every place where they've promoted good business, the quality of life in that area has been better. And you can even see in the differences between Middle Tennessee and Northern Alabama, where we have our fifth location. Mm-hmm. You can see a huge difference between the strong business climate that Rutherford County has and that Nashville and the county surrounding it has versus Northern Alabama, and you can see a huge difference in the impact that the economy has had. I mean, it has impacted us in this area, but it's not near as bad as there. And some of my aunt, for example, lives in Las Vegas, mm-hmm. and I mean, it's impacted out there much worse. And again, everything is just if you can promote a good business environment, other things start taking care of itself. And you know, and again, unfortunately, you know, you'll have some people that take advantage of it, and something needs to be done with them, because it's not only just because what they did may have been wrong, but it also impacts other businesses that are trying to do the right thing.
What do you attribute the strength of say Rutherford County and Middle Tennessee? Why do we have such a strong influence on businesses here?
Well, I mean, Rutherford County is an outstanding place to do business. I mean, we're a day's drive from, and I think the number is like 75% of the nation's population, just mm-hmm. because, you know, it goes all the way up to New York and all the way down to Florida, and I mean, it's very centrally located in that sense. it's also, again, we Rutherford County has been very good with businesses. Destination Rutherford has helped in bringing in a lot of these businesses that have come. The work ethic of people in Rutherford County is amazing. I've again, and just in looking at other areas and working with other people, it's amazing the difference between the people of Rutherford County and the people of some of the other places in the work ethic. It's we still have, as large as we've gotten, we still have a small town feel. Mm-hmm. And I think people want to have that. They want to come, they want to feel like they're in a small town, and yet they want to have the amenities of a large town, like good shopping and being able to go to movies and do other things in the town. And it's amazing the heart of people Rutherford County. The nonprofit works that I see, and the people that will work and volunteers, and the money given for those, it is so great in comparison to so many of the other places that I've either lived or we've had restaurants in.
And I think that's been the biggest draw. I mean, Rutherford County is almost like a magnet. You take the attitude of the people here and their willingness to care for other people, that reaches out a long way. And once you come here, it's hard to deny that you have people here that really care about you.
I've always said Rutherford County is like quicksand. You don't plan on staying, but once you get here, you fall in love with it. You got to stay. My intent was I went to school in Memphis for 2 years, and I didn't handle being away from home very well the first couple of years, and got myself a lot in debt. And I said, I'll just come back and go to MTSU for a little bit, then move somewhere else. And you just fall in love with it. I went to law school in Kansas City, and I missed this area so bad the whole time I was gone. It was just, and I'm nothing against Kansas City. Loved it. Loved the Midwest. But again, it was just not home.
I know a lot of your heritage is from Greece, and I'm sure it bothers you right now with the economic conditions that they have. And it's hard for me to understand, because from all what I know about Greece, it's one of the greatest places in the world to go on a vacation and see all the beauties and the history of what's going on in the world. Because it seems like everything centers around that area.
It was obviously at one time, I mean, that's where everything was around, between Athens and Sparta and all that. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's I asked my grandmother, my mother's mother, one time. I said, I know I'm half Greek, but I don't know what my other half, mother half is. And she goes, well, Peter, that's simple. You're half Greek and you're half American. And I said, no, I'm all American. I've actually never been to Greece. And I look over there, and it kind of says, never been. My sister actually went to Greece. She went to Greece and Turkey, and she was actually, left Greece on September 11th, 2001. And when the towers came down, and it was a struggle for us, because we didn't know where she was. We couldn't find out anything that was going on in Turkey, mm-hmm. which was predominantly a Muslim country, and we didn't know, okay, is this going to be a problem or not a problem? How's she going to get back? And still trying to deal with the emotional aspects that everybody else was going through on that time as well. So, but my father's never been to Greece. I've never been to Greece. And it's one of the places that I intend to go one time, but obviously I'm not going to go until they can kind of figure out their economic problems. So,
well, very few of us have our roots just completely in here from the start of our families. Most of us came from Europe or other areas to get here. And I've always had a hankering, I guess you might say, to go to Ireland, because that's where most of my home people would be, or in Scotland. We're kind of split in two, but it's just something that when you become so Americanized here, especially, and when I say Americanized, it's hard to say that all the way across the country, because we're so different from south to east to west, all across the line, and many times we don't even speak the same language. But it's something about this country that if I see the flag, or they sing God Bless America, or I sing the Star Spangled Banner, it almost always brings strong emotions to me. And I'm sure it does you the same way.
Oh, I can't agree anymore. I mean, it's... It's one of those things that again, we're just as a family, and me personally, I mean, I just so proud of what we do. And you know, we make mistakes and we do, you know, we do wrong things, but again, as a whole, I mean, we're doing a pretty good job. I mean, even during our downtimes throughout our entire history, you know, it's something to be extremely proud of. I don't know why anybody that lives here and has grown up here can have any type of hatred for it.
No,
it doesn't make any sense to me.
Now, you did receive your law degree.
Yes.
Do you ever utilize that education?
I always utilize the education. Actually, I keep my license still up to date, so mm-hmm. I'm still technically a lawyer. I was at a class, you know, getting my hours to keep my license up to date yesterday, in fact. I've used the law degree a lot of times in dealing with Department of Labor issues, employee handling issues, and things of that nature. So we've been able to use it quite successfully, and just being able to understand things, and also to help out the lawyers that we do use from time to time. So
I can't imagine you at Demas's ever having to have an attorney for the way you run that place. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing to me. I want to let you know that one of our new sponsors is At Home Care, where they're at 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, and they're right behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. You can reach them at 713-4639 or check out their website at www.athomecaretennessee, that's TN, .com. And what they provide for you is a service that I think that we will all need at one time, and many need it right now. As you get older, you have a harder time taking care of the task that you have to take care of at your home. And none of us wants to leave our home. And this is one of the sponsors that I have a whole lot of respect for, because they provide a person's ability to remain at home, and they go in and take care of the errands, laundry, personal needs, light housekeeping, transportation to appointments, grocery shopping, meal preparation, medication reminders, and many other things. And they're available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I recommend them wholeheartedly if you're having any specific times, whether it's an age problem or you're having physical problems or whatever, and you just need help, give them a call.
This is Sean Brown at Southeastern Tire Service, where we now offer the Michelin Promise Plan. The Michelin Promise Plan is a new offer which includes a 30-day ride guarantee, 3-year flat tire changing assistance, and a limited mileage warranty on all Michelin passenger and light truck tires, replacement and original equipment. Did you know we now provide air conditioning service? Let our ASC certified technicians get your car road ready for spring today.
Southeastern Tire Service on Broad Street across from Advance Auto.
Hello, this is Jim Bryan at First Bank.
And I'm Chuck Lewis. First Bank presents Good Neighbor Events, news of what our local schools, churches, and community groups are doing.
Here it is Thursday, July the 14th, and time for Good Neighbor Events brought to you by First Bank. Well, the Red Cross is desperately low on blood. Please give the gift of life today, all through the day, at the new Red Cross location. That blood drive's going on from 9 until 6 tonight. The Red Cross is at 501 Memorial Boulevard, the former Chamber of Commerce building. Give blood at the Red Cross until 6 tonight. At 7:30 this evening, the Mid-State Singles Square Dance Club invites you to come on over to the St. Clair Street Senior Center and have some fun. 7:30 tonight. At 8:30 this evening, it's Movies Under the Stars over at the Siegel Neighborhood Park. This is a free service of the Murfreesboro Parks and Recreation Department. Tonight's movie, the animated Yogi Bear. That's at 8:30 at the Siegel Neighborhood Park tonight. Now, tomorrow morning, the Farmer's Market from 6 to 11 over at the Lane Agri Park. That's at 315 John Rice Boulevard, just down from Sam's, next door to Paws, 6 to 11 in the morning. And at tomorrow morning's Farmer's Market from 8 to 11, the tour of Pick Tennessee products will roll through. Don't you dare miss that one. That's all tomorrow at the Farmer's Market. This reminder, the 21st Annual Omega Free Basketball Clinic is from 10 until 2 this Saturday at the Patterson Community Center. It's all free, including the t-shirts, the refreshments, even the trophies and medals for performance. MTSU's head basketball coach Kermit Davis and the Blue Raider men's basketball team will be a part of Saturday's clinic. It's all free, 10 until 2 Saturday at the Patterson Community Center. Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by First Bank.
Weather Eye.
Occasional sunshine this afternoon, slight chance of an isolated shower or thunderstorm, high in the mid-90s. Tonight, chance of showers and storms, low 73. I'm WGNS meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Right now, it's 91.
It's been a busy week, and it's finally winding down. Too tired to cook supper? Stop by Kirk & Burt's and pick up our family pack to go. A pound of barbecue, buns, and your choice of side, all for just $9.99. Kirk & Burt's, 517 Kaysen Lane, just down from the theater.
You've known him for years. Now you can visit with him every day. It's The Truman Show, continuing right now on WGNS, AM and FM.
And today's guest, Peter Demas.
Sausage and biscuits, gravy and grits, home ground, homemade, it'll get you fits. Blueberry pancakes and corn cakes too, I'm a-licking my lips now, how about you? Readable Mill.
And Peter Demas says that he is going to be heading toward the Readable Mill pretty soon. And I know Tom Brady will be delighted to see him there. Tom Brady is the one who rebuilt the mill and is now fully operational. They have breakfasts there on Saturday morning from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. And Nora's in there helping him. And whatever they fixed you is made right there at the mill. And it's an amazing place right on the river. Take about a 10-minute drive out John Bragg Highway. And just before you get out of Rutherford County, you'll see Cripple Creek on the right. Turn left there on the old Woodbury Highway. About a 2-mile drive. Go right over the river. Turn left. And if the parking place is not full, now if it's full, you'll have to turn right. But it is one of those places that you go back in time, and you heard John Blankenship and friends singing about the Readable Mill. And John Blankenship is an attorney, just like Peter. Now he's kind of in the restaurant business. He's more in the music business. He's got Avant Lane with him and friends there that, just absolutely great musicians. They really are. Billy Yearwood can play a mandolin as good as anybody. And Ken and Sarah Frizzell, they add music to it. And if you get a chance, or if you don't have a chance, go out there anyway, because you'll never regret it. So you're going to head out Saturday, huh?
We'll probably head out either this Saturday or the following Saturday. My son's going through acting camp, and he has a play this Saturday. So
acting camp?
He's going through, acting camp up at First Methodist Church. There's a Schamburger Productions, and he did it last year and loved it, and he's doing it again this year. So his play is this weekend, so we may not be able to get up this weekend, but I definitely will be the next weekend if we can't. So
when you get about 3 or 4 grouchy customers that go into Demas's, do you have to go to an acting camp for if you're waiting on them to actually make people think that you're enjoying their company?
No, you know my mother used to say, you know, when people are grumpy, you just got to realize you're dealing with them for one hour of one day, and they're dealing with themselves 24 hours a day. So you got to have to feel more sorry for them than anything else. And many people, they don't realize they're grumpy. You know, they think they're either being funny or they're doing something else. And it's I'm not going to let somebody grumpy attitude impact the rest of my day and impact the way I make money or do anything. And again, it's our job if you're in the hospitality business to make people happier when they leave than when they came in. Mm-hmm. So, grumpy people don't bother me at all. It's my grandfather was an extremely grumpy person, and so I got along great with him. So, grumpy people don't bother me in the slightest.
Your mama had such a wonderful attitude about how to handle things, and your dad told me of one situation that I get a kick out of, and he's told it to me 2 or 3 times, but he can tell it to me 10 more times because I still enjoy it. You had one bad customer in there, and he was told that it would be 30 minutes before they could get him a table. And 10 minutes had gone by, still had 20 minutes to go. He came by and went to Miss Doris Demas, and he said, "How long will it be?" And she says, "Well, it'll be about 20 more minutes." And he did this three more times. And finally, he came up to her and said, "I want a table, and I want it right now." So she was smiled at him, was very nice, escorted him around through the restaurant, where all the tables were obviously full. And then she asked him, "Now, which person do you want me to go and tell to leave so that you can have their table?"
See, if I had done that or my father had done that, we would end up with a black eye. She had an ability to just to be very direct and very blunt, and people loved her for it. I've said before, my mother had negative charisma. You know, she could be negative, and people loved her. But I was always amazed at a lot of the stuff that she can do, and with both employees and customers alike. And again, she was just well loved, and she's clearly missed.
You could have 20, 25 waiters and waitresses in there, and at one time or another, every one of those eyeballs would click over toward her. It was they were wanting her acceptance no matter what they were doing. And I always thought that's the highest compliment that you can have.
I have friends who said that when they would go in and eat and she would walk around the restaurant, they said they would straighten up, or they would even help the servers by taking the trash off the table, you know, knowing that she was coming through. And, you know, the last several years of her life, you know, she would walk the dining room or whatever, but she was physically not able to do the same work that she was able to do. And, you know, many of that stuff had been slowly turned over to me and to our general managers. And but again, when she was in there, she definitely made that impression.
And your dad, I mean, he is one of the nicest people. And we've kind of got a little old-timers club that we'll go in special places and eat. And sometimes we'll go in and he'll actually dine with us at Demas. And he always makes us pay our bill and make sure we tip at least 20% too. So that's part of the beauty of it. But he is such a nice man, and he has so many great stories. My question is he as droll as he seems to be? Because he seems to be always able to come up with this quick wit that it just seems comes out of nowhere.
You know, I growing up in a Greek family where everybody talks nonstop, you know, you have to be quick on your feet or you're going to be in a lot of trouble. He's teased me my entire life, and as a result of him teasing me, I have a very similar sense of humor, and my I pick on my kids all the time the same way I was picked on, and I'm already seeing them kind of figuring that out, and it's kind of bad that when my 6-year-old daughter can look at me and outsmart me in the quick wit, and I'm thinking I'm in a lot of trouble when she turns 15. So.
Isn't that frustrating? Oh, you're about ready to go through the big heel category. Fool's heel. Bless your heart. It doesn't seem... I mean, you guys have such great work ethics and such a strong family bond. And did you guys ever stray a little bit as you went through your teenage years?
I can't say that I never did stray. I definitely did. Again, my father and I particularly, we fought quite a bit in my later teenage years. I'm a very opinionated person, and I'm not really shy when it comes to my opinions, and it created a lot of conflict growing up, and I could say definitively my sister, who is 11 years older than I am, my sister actually, I remember the fights that she and my father would have and mother. But, you know, one thing again, kind of having a close family in any type of relationship, if it's a good relationship, you have fights and you learn from them and you move on. It's a key to any relationship, whether it's a friendship, whether it's a employee employer, husband wife, you know, it doesn't really matter. And, you know, we grew up that way, and it was just it was just kind of accepted. As I you know, left home and went out, I realized that a lot of people aren't that way, and it was kind of a shock to me. But But yeah, no, I definitely did things that I shouldn't have, and you know, but it's again, it's what made me who I am today. So,
well, I'm glad you are who you. But you could have been somebody else. I mean, if you had stayed in the legal business, what direction do you think you would have gone?
You know, the whole purpose of me going into law and law school was to help people and
get away from the restaurant business.
They did well. You know, part of it was for that, but that was because I didn't see the value of restaurants at the time. And you know, I'm not quite sure exactly what I would end up doing with the legal field. You know, but again, it is.
You'd been a great advertiser. I mean, you could have got on and say, if you've ever stubbed your toe on the Rutherford County Courthouse steps, call such and such attorney's group, and we'll make sure that you will be able to live well the rest of your life.
I think it would be pretty safe to say that I probably would not have ended up on the back of a phone book as an ad there. You know, I worked for an ambulance chaser in Kansas City when I was going through law school. And then when I came here, I worked for Frank Fly off the square, and, mm-hmm. and Frank is an amazing attorney. He's
had many cases with him.
Across. I was going to say he is an amazing attorney, very organized. Yeah. Does an outstanding job, but I can definitely see why people who are on the other side would definitely have other opinions of him. But he
no, I like Frank. I really do, and everybody's got a job. That type of legal responsibility has never, well, in some ways it does bother me, because there are cases that come up that really should never end up in court, as we know. It's kind of like, to me, some of those cases are nothing but extortion, and they really aren't. But the cases where people seem to make a lot of money when there's really very little responsibility there, but they're going to make it for somebody. And that's what always gets me on these ads on television, say, well, we're going to do this for them. But they forget who's on the other side. There's somebody that's being taken to the cleaners on the other side.
Well, that's true, and you know, but a lot of that responsibility falls also on our state legislature and the judges. You know, and you know, many times, you know, lawyers are in the parameters of what the law is, and sometimes they can stretch those parameters, but mm-hmm. somebody has to allow them to stretch that parameter, mm-hmm. and it's either again the state legislature that reacts too quickly and too aggressively on something, or mm-hmm. again, it's a judge that doesn't want to make anybody mad, so they say, you know what, we're going to go ahead and allow you to do it and let a jury do it, so the jury's the bad guy instead mm-hmm. of the judge. You know, so I think there's fault to go around and everything with that whole process of making laws and enforcing laws, but again, the laws are there for a reason, and the lawyers are literally just working within what they can do. And you know, so many times the lawyers get a rap for something that really has nothing to do with them. You know.
But there are some situations, like I worked in government for a long time, and I saw a lot of frivolous lawsuits that came by. And the sad thing about a lawsuit against a government entity is that as an attorney and as the one who is actually the person who is suing, they're going to win every time, simply because the extreme cost of taking a case to court, somewhere you have to put a dollar value on it. And we have done that many times in the past where, I mean, just the preliminary costs are so heavy that by the time you get to court, you've already lost.
My view has been, and fortunately, partly because I don't like to be extorted, as you said, mm-hmm. we've had many frivolous lawsuits against us, and unless it falls under an insurance realm where the insurance company hires the attorneys, and I don't really get a say in the matter. Mm-hmm. But my view is, if we're right, we're going to fight it, and you know, it's if we lose, that's the cost of doing business. And you know, I of course don't want to be sued, and we try to do right, and mm-hmm. you know, if we're wrong, I'm going to admit it, and we're going to do what we can to fix it. But yeah, you're right, the costs are outstanding. We had a lawsuit that was filed against us about 4 or 5 years ago, and we won in summary judgment. But just getting to that level of summary judgment, it cost us between $15,000 and $18,000 mm-hmm. in legal fees. Just to defend it up at that point in time. And that's not going to trial and doing the other stuff, which would have been even more expensive for something that we won. And that's that part is, and you're right, there is a cost-benefit analysis of it. For me, I look at the cost, too, of I want people to know, you know, you aren't going to be able to get $5,000 from us here and $2,000 mm-hmm. from us here, because eventually that's going to add up more than that 15, and us fighting it will be well worth it in the long run. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes, again, the short-term losses are long-term gains, and, you know, sometimes you take a risk and you lose, and sometimes you don't. So, you know, we just try to win as many as we can. But, again, ultimately, as long as we're trying to do the right thing, mm-hmm. whether or not people agree with us or disagree with us, as long as in our hearts we're doing the right thing, then that's what's important. And I don't think, and I think a lot of times a lot of decisions are not made with the right thing in mind. Mm-hmm. And again, that's where it gets a lot of people in trouble.
When a really smart attorney who's he doesn't have the normal human values that someone else would, they will actually file a lawsuit against the governmental entity, and then they will start building up the costs with professional witnesses and all those other things, and before you know it, you may be in six figures before you ever get to court. And we were fortunate enough to have an attorney that the county hired that was in Nashville, and he worked with me diligently on all those cases, trying to get rid of them. And nine times out of ten, I said, listen, we haven't done anything wrong. I mean, it's obvious. It's frivolous. There's no way they can win. And he would say, well, let me tell you something, Truman. The cost is already up to $50,000. I would say, what? And then he would explain to me all the little line items of where those costs go. And it's mind-boggling. If the people in this country knew that all the bills that they were paying for just ridiculous things, that you have people who are unscrupulous enough to go out there and they have found a market for themselves. And that's crazy.
There's a law firm out of Miami that sends people out into different restaurants mm-hmm. that are in wheelchairs just to see any type of violation, because they have one violation, then attorney's fees kick in and you have to pay attorney's fees. And so you literally, your paper towel dispenser can be off by 1 inch and you have to pay attorney's fees. So yeah, those things add up, and you know, sometimes you have to deal with it.
And you've got sharp eyes. When somebody comes in your restaurant, can you pick out fairly well someone that you know that you're going to have trouble with from time to time? And you don't have to put them in a category.
No, I mean, no, there's sometimes, you know, I mean, you know, we've had people that come in to cases to see if they're going to try to rob us. We've had people that come in that, you know, right from the beginning, they're making threats and they're doing those things. And again, you know, I've had one lady come in with a blue ring around her face where she was huffing paint, you know, trying to make claims on something. You know, some of them are obvious, some of them aren't, and you have to choose. And, you know, but again, if we're going to err right, we're going to err in favor of the customer. So,
and it actually comes back, because there are what I call professional people who make money doing things like
there,
that.
There definitely are.
I know, when I worked for Greyhound years ago, we used to run into them a lot, and they would do something simple like fall on the floor, and maybe they see something wet over there, and they'll fall, not hurting themselves at all, but enough to get a few $100 or $1,000 or whatever.
I love watching the TV show about the people that try to that try to scam. You know, casinos are in Vegas is one of them, by putting the stuff down and trying to fake the falls.
Yeah.
And, you know, casinos that have a camera watching every mm-hmm. little inch of that place. It cracks me up thinking they can get away with it there instead of, you know, trying it somewhere else. But again, you know, you're going to build a better mousetrap, you know, the bigger mouse is going to come. So you just got to, again, we just do what we can. And those people have always been around, and, you know, just hopefully hopefully they just go somewhere else.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Peter Demas.
This is Truman Jones. Let me take just a minute to tell you about my friends down the road in Shevaville at Pirtle and Howerton Automotive. Whether you're looking for a new or used vehicle, Pirtle and Howerton is the place to go. Ford, Mercury, Chevrolet, Buick, or GMC. You can find anything you need at Pirtle & Howerton Automotive in Shevaville. They take pride in the vehicles they sell and strive to succeed in great customer experience and satisfaction. Whether you are looking for a new or used, their friendly and knowledgeable staff are eager to assist you in your car buying process. You can check out their extensive inventory at PirtleHowerton.com.
That's Pirtle & Howerton Automotive, 2006 North Main in Shelbyville. Don't let a 20-minute drive cost you thousands of dollars. Go by, see them today, or give them a call, 1-800-264-6800, or online at PirtleHowerton.com.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic is more than just a clinic. It's the doctors you can trust, a technician you can believe in, and a staff member who goes the extra mile. From the time someone walks in our doors, the difference becomes evident. All of our resources are used to improve the healthcare experience of our patients, and we have been a part of Rutherford and surrounding counties for over 60 years. Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Murfreesboro's new indoor air-conditioned flea market is open every Saturday and Sunday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. They're located in the old White Stag Warehouse on Park Avenue. That's just off Middle Tennessee Boulevard. Everything from furniture, jewelry, to knives and toys, and much, much more. Come join us this weekend at the Murfreesboro Flea Market.
Vendor space available.
For more information on booth rentals, call them today, 895-2009. 895-2009. And I'll see you at the flea market.
He knows Rutherford County, and he knows the people of Rutherford County. Truman Jones, here on WGNS, AM and FM.
Today's guest, Mr. Peter Demas.
And Brian's holding up two fingers. For what is that?
That means you have 2 minutes.
Oh, I thought it was 2 hours. Peter, and I, we're just getting started.
Well, I know. You'll have to have him back.
Well, I'm going to have him back if he's willing to come back. Maybe after today's
show,
he may not want to come back. Tell me, what is the main thing on the enjoyment level that working and owning Demas is? What is the one thing that strikes out as the thing that's the most enjoyable to you?
You know, the whenever we work with somebody and we're teaching somebody something and mm-hmm. they catch it, the light comes on and they catch it. It's one of the most exciting things for me when I get to see them kind of get it and buy into it, and mm-hmm. then so that would probably be the number one as far as the moment. But there are many times where I'll go out and just sit in the lobby and just watch customers leave and watch them leave happy, and you know, they don't even pay attention to me sitting there, and I watch them leave. And you know, I tell people a lot, you know, I'll stay awake at night more if I lost a customer than I lose money. You know, to see the impact again you make on people, mm-hmm. that's well worth anything else that I could have ever done.
And you see it, like the smiles on people's faces, and a lot of the people that come in there are coming with pretty good sized groups, their families, and you see a lot of granddads and grandkids and birthday parties and things like that, and your staff always makes people feel like it's special on those days, because I know they go over and they take the picture, and if you tell them it's somebody's birthday, they'll bring them a cake or a piece of cake, and everybody will share on it. And it's one of those things that your clientele there are repeat customers. Almost everybody that I go into that restaurant that you have, I either know them or I've seen them before. And that speaks volumes, because people are not going to go back to a restaurant that they don't feel comfortable in or they don't like the food.
Well, your restaurant industry is one of the few industries that you actually, you know, you get waited on by a stranger. You get cooked food with a stranger, but the restaurant itself, instead of fearing the strangers like we're taught many mm-hmm. times, you know, the restaurant actually brings people together to talk and enjoy themselves. And it's something that's really helped out, you know, society as a whole, from the history of restaurants all the way through. That's where you go have meetings. That's where you go and you celebrate birthdays or whatever. And it's just you know, we've been very fortunate with the people we have and with the community that supported us. But you know, but the restaurants itself it does something for people that again many other industries just can't do.
I had my glasses on. At least I thought I had them on when I went in the restaurant one night, and when we left, I couldn't find my glasses. And we were already almost home. And Terry and Brownie Malone, I don't know if you know them, but
yes,
they go there quite often.
Yes.
I called them because they were there, and I said, would you mind going over to the table that we were at and see if I left my glasses? And they went over and said, well, we looked, Truman. Sorry, we can't. But they said that they would continue to look. Well, I went there the next night, and one of the guys, before I ever got there, came up to me and said, did you ever find your glasses, Mr. Jones? I didn't even know he even knew who I was. But I thought that was so unique and so nice for them to care about that. And my wife and I argue about one of your waiters. How tall is he? You know which one I'm talking about.
I know exactly which one you're talking about, and he is 6'8".
6'8". Now, see, I win. She told me he was every bit of 7 feet tall, and I said, no, I do not think so.
Yeah, no, he's six foot
stands
eight.
Out and stands up.
Yes, he does. He just because all door frames have to be 6'8", and with his shoes, he has to duck just a little just to get underneath the door frames. But, yeah, he's 6'8", and... yeah.
He doesn't play for MTSU, does he?
No. Matter of fact, he says he has no skills at all in basketball. So, but yeah, he's a wonderfully nice guy and a great server. So.
And all of them are extremely nice. Peter, it's been a great hour with you. Seems more like 20 minutes or 10 minutes, but I want to have you back on. It's been very enjoyable.
Well, I appreciate you having me, and I'm glad you're able to do this.
Well, continue. Good luck.
Well, thank you so much.
We'll see you tomorrow, and we'll have Judge Royce Taylor on tomorrow.